Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 24, 2017. Former minister in the Kiir's administration says the government in Juba is targeting civilians.
The violation of human rights is continuing well in Equatoria, in Greater Equatoria, Greater Upper Nile and Western Bahr al-Ghazal. So when you talk about peace, you should not talk at the same time about war.
And the Catholic Church says government and rebel forces are killing civilians across the country.
Killing, raping, looting, displacement, attack on churches, and destruction of properties continue all over the country. In some town, there is calm, but the absence of gunfire does not mean peace has come. In other towns, civilians are effectively trapped inside the town due to insecurity on the surrounding roads.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The European Union has donated more than 80 million euros, almost about 90 million US dollars, to help millions of South Sudanese displaced by the conflict. The head of the European Union humanitarian operation in South Sudan says the funds will be used to purchase food for millions of people who are starving. For VOA News, Mungume Devs Rwakarinj reports from Juba.
Peterson Morten is the Director General for European Civil Protection and Humanitarian Aid Operations.
The 82 million that is currently active in South Sudan is what we have started the year 2017 with here in the first quarter. Last year we ended the year on about 100 million plus, a little bit more. I cannot say what is going to happen in the rest of the year. We may be able to access further funds. It depends on many things.
Those things are both inside and outside of South Sudan. Morten says the EU is worried about the hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese unable to meet their basic needs, mainly due to the ongoing conflict.
We have been on the brink of famine a couple of times since independence in South Sudan, but it has never happened, and now it has happened. It is what we technically call a localized famine, but it's still 100,000 people, probably 102,000 people that are currently affected. That's a lot of people, and there is the risk that there's another million people in South Sudan that may slide into famine as we get further into the hunger gap.
A form of famine declaration means people have already started dying of hunger. Government and United Nations officials reported this week that the food security in South Sudan continues to deteriorate and that 4.9 million people, about 42% of the country's population, is food insecure. United Nations agencies warn that unless urgent action is taken, more people will die of hunger in South Sudan. UN agencies say an upsurge in violence since July 2016 has further devastated the food production, including previously stable areas. The soaring inflation of up to 800% and reduced harvest has hit areas that traditionally rely on local markets to meet food needs. 17-year-old Rebecca Nyakuma, an IDP who stays in POC 3 of an UNMISS camp, says she hopes the funds will be used to buy enough textbooks besides food. The primary three student says she sometimes goes to school without a meal.
If there is some food, you can eat, but if there is no food, you can go to school. You cannot wait in the food or whatever what. We're just going because you want to know something.
She ran to the camp with her mother and her sister last July when her father was killed. 30-year-old Lima Musa, who lives in POC 3, hopes additional funds will come in time to help IDPs like himself.
The food is there, it cannot come on time, just come in time. We have another problem. We don't have good medical care here inside the camp. There's many people who die, like malaria and mortality.
Morten says the EU has donated more than $400 million since the crisis began in late 2013. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Juba.
The former Minister of Labour in the Transitional Government of National Unity, who resigned from President Salva Kiir's government last week, alleges that the South Sudan Army commits human rights violations on a daily basis. Lieutenant General Dup Both Lam says he resigned from his post as a minister because of what he calls lack of seriousness from President Kiir to end violence in parts of the country.
There is no political will. The violation of human rights is continuing where in Equatoria, in Greater Equatoria, Greater Upper Nile, and Western Bahr al-Ghazal. So when you talk about peace, you should not talk at the same time about war. I am originally from the SLMIO, but we were too hostage. That's why I remained in Juba that time.
And who took you hostage? Who took you hostage in Juba? You're saying you were taken hostage. That is why you could not leave Juba.
It is not myself alone. It is all the entire leadership of the SLMIO. You know, when we remain in Juba, Juba being controlled by the SLM in government. And of course, when the forces of Dr. Yang were pushed out from Juba, all the cabinet, the entire cabinet of the SLMIO remained in Juba, where General Taban is having a conspiracy, a direct conspiracy with the government, with the intention to be the first vice president.
The month of January, you were still the Minister of Labor in the transitional government of national unity. How is the government operating? We hear people have not received their salaries. The economic crisis is just biting left and right. Could you tell us what is happening there?
You know, John Tanza, war is a t-shirt of violence, and it is very expensive. So the economic activity in South Sudan is very difficult. So I think it is out of secret sometimes to get easily the salaries or basic salaries of the civil servant. It is difficult. But sometimes they do struggle in case if they get money somewhere or royal money, where they pay sometimes. And every 3 months or 2 months, people live without salaries. So it is about war. When you have insecurity, you cannot mobilize your potential resources that can lift it up the country.
Can you tell us how many times did you receive your salary during the time you were a minister?
Well, I think during my time, I think they tried the level best. I remember people miss only for the year, for the part of that year, people miss only 3 months. And the current minister of of finance is really doing well. Only that the problem, there is no resources, there is no money, there is no reserve. And when the country have no reserve, where do you expect to get to pay people all the time? The little money that are there sometimes, the regime is looking after feeding the army so that they can fight back the forces of opposition.
The reasons where you decided to leave the government, you gave 8 reasons. Reason number 3, you said there is forceful disappearances, arbitrary arrest and random killing and torturing and abduction of suspected IO members. You gave an example of James Gadet, you gave an example of Samuel Dong and Agri Idri, who are still missing. And you went on saying that there are 15 Kenyan members of parliament who are calling themselves friends of South Sudan who are behind this kidnapping. Could you tell us more?
There was a group of 15 MPs that went to Juba and they came out openly that we are friends of South Sudan. Anyone that will talk about to topple or either mobilizing a population in Kenya against the government of South Sudan, such a person will risk either deportation or arrest by Kenyan government. And I don't know why they call themselves a friend of South Sudan. And Kenyan is one of the members of the IGAD. They live in the conference, the peace agreement. And we hope if there is any problem, they can maintain the neutrality. So the disappearances of the people, John Tanza, I think is very difficult. When we ask ourselves also as a cabinet, some cabinet from the old government complaining that the system of abducting people outside the country is introduced by General Taban. It was not there before. So people used to pay money. Again, it's one person. They used to deport those people, like the president of Dr. Yang Macher. I think this one is not the correct way to lead the country. They should revise their position. You should not force people to follow you. As a leader, we influence your group. I don't think that peace will come when people are trying to intimidate, to harass, to torture, to kill. Peace will not come to South Sudan.
That's Lieutenant General Gabriel Dopbot-Lam, former Minister for Labor in the Transitional Government of National Unity. Lam resigned from his position last week. He spoke with me earlier yesterday. South Sudanese Catholic bishops say they have received disturbing reports from seven dioceses across the country indicating both government and opposition forces are employing scorch-to-earth policy when fighting each other. As Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba, it is the civilians who suffer because of it.
The bishops concluded a three-day conference in Juba yesterday. They say the scorched-earth policy is a method both sides are using even when civilians are still present. Father Charles Abut Edward, Secretary General of the South Sudan Catholic Bishop Regional Conference, says it is civilians who pay the price when South Sudan's warring parties burn villages to the ground. Reading from a prepared position paper the bishops issued at the end of the conference, Father Edward describes the ruthless violence.
Killing, raping, looting, displacement, attack on churches, and destruction of properties continue all over the country. In some town, there is calm, but the absence of gunfire does not mean peace has come. In other towns, civilians are effectively trapped inside the town due to insecurity on the surrounding roads.
Fighters suspected of committing crimes on both sides have not been punished, Father Edward says. He cites the case of Sister Veronica, a medical doctor who was gunned down by soldiers in Yei while she was driving a clearly marked ambulance last year in May. Although her killers were arrested, there has not been any report of punitive measures taken. The bishops say most perpetrators of violence are never arrested or sentenced to prison.
Some towns have become a ghost town, empty except for security forces and perhaps members of one faction or tribe. Even when they have fled to our churches or to UN camp for protection, they are still harassed by security forces. Many have been forced to flee to neighboring countries for protection.
South Sudan military spokesman Brigadier General Lulurwai Kwang neither admits nor denies government forces use a scorched-earth policy in countering insurgency operations.
And we also challenge members of the Kalaji to come to SPLA-JR headquarters, talk with the military leadership. We joined a fact-finding mission so that it goes to Yei and find out exactly whether it is correct that we are practicing as a scorching policy, whether we are really entirely responsible for all reported rape cases in all the places that they have been talking about. Up to now, whenever there is a new allegation, the message has been, we are ready to do investigation once we are provided with concrete evidence.
It is difficult to prove that soldiers raped women after the rapes occurred in South Sudan due to a significant lack of medical resources. The bishops say South Sudan's leaders should stop claiming that the country is peaceful. They describe the suffering being inflicted on civilians by the warring parties as a form of collective punishment, which is outlawed as a war crime under the Geneva Conventions. Waki Simon Wodo, VOA News, Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a group of South Sudanese politicians discuss the future of their country. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you spend your day off from work?
My day off, which is normal, a Sunday anyway, personally, I go to church, go back home, do my laundry, watch a movie or soccer. I think basically that's my routine.
I do laundry in the morning. I love traveling and I love swimming. Sometimes I go for swimming, sometimes I go for shopping, sometimes I party with friends. You know, that's that day I get free to be around friends.
Reading some novels and also sometimes doing my personal cleaning.
Hang with the family members, relax your mind and forget about the work, something, and just relax I basically sleep it off because you'd be tired.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
Hello, Mambo! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, treat your ears to a luscious hour of African music. From new, fresh, hot airway hip-hop to Tuareg rock and roll to island fusion of the Seychelles, I've got it for you. Plus, in this edition, live music and interviews with amazing artists from Zanzibar's 2017 Sauti za Busara Festival. All this and more just for you, peeps. So tune in this Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC, right here with me, Heather, on Music Time in Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A group of South Sudanese politicians, including Angelina Teny and Rebecca Nyandeng de Mabior, told participants during a recent panel discussion in Washington that the main problem in South Sudan is the failure of political leadership to set aside their differences and put the people's interests first. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Rebecca Nyandeng de Mabior, former Minister of Roads and Transport, says the only way forward, after what she calls the collapsed 2015 peace deal, is to initiate an inclusive dialogue that brings together all stakeholders.
Juba is still talking about that the agreement is still going on. We don't see how the agreement is going on when the other part, a party to agreement, has been forced out.
Government officials have repeatedly said they're working for the interest of peace, and the national dialogue expected to get underway in March will address the challenges and human rights abuses committed by both sides. Majak Dagut, a former South Sudanese deputy defense minister who also took part in the discussion held at Washington's D.C. American University on Wednesday, disagrees. He says the national dialogue the government is pushing is one-sided.
A methodology which is good for all of us would require that we sit around the table, we consult, and we agree on those issues, including what outcomes we expect from this kind of exercise. So really, it's a monologue. It is an attempt to legitimize the regime. It is an attempt to legitimize the current arrangements. It is an attempt to legitimize Paxala.
Angelina Teny, member of the SPLA in opposition's political bureau, says the blueprint of South Sudan is flawed. She says along with ensuring an inclusive national dialogue, policymakers must draft a constitution that ensures a system of checks and balances that safeguards the state's power while ensuring that power is not concentrated in the executive branch.
We were emphasizing that there is a need for a constitution, that there was a need to have a constitution that addresses the issues of system of government, and that there was a need to have a constitution that would actually devolve more of the power.
Panelist Emmanuel Ajawin, a spokesman for the National Democratic Movement, reminded listeners that dialogue happens between people with political differences. He agrees with Nyandeng that the main issue in South Sudan is the failure of President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to set aside their differences for the good of the entire country. The Washington-based AfriLead Foundation, which co-sponsored the discussion, provided the audio. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The government of the Democratic Republic of Congo has launched an investigation into possible abuses by security forces in Kasai Province. Conflict has been intensifying in that part of the country in the past 6 months, but a video posted online late last week drew international attention. For VOA News in DRC, William Klaus has more.
The undated video appears to show Congolese troops firing at unarmed men and women purportedly affiliated to a militia known as Kamwina Nsapu. The video then shows the soldiers shoot injured people or bodies at point-blank range. Several similar videos have since been shared online. On Monday, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights said it has received reports of government soldiers killing more than 150 people in Kasai Central province over an 8-day period this month. The government initially dismissed the video as a fake, but changed course on Wednesday. A statement put out by the government spokesman said that President Joseph Kabila has ordered an inquest into the events depicted in the video, as well as how and why the footage became public. The UN has condemned both the militia for using child soldiers and the government for excessive use of force, including, a UN spokesman has said, automatic weapons and rocket-propelled grenades. Anaclet Shimbalanga, a Kasai-based human rights activist, told VOA that the insurrection is being fueled by a frustration over a lack of development in the region.
Lamini a des bâtons magiques, des armes blanches.
He says the militia have sticks and knives and sometimes hunting weapons, while the army uses all the powerful resources at its disposal. The conflict began in the Kasai region last year, when the customary chief of Kamwina Nsapu rejected the state's authority and instructed his supporters to drive out the security forces. The chief was reportedly killed by the military in August, but clashes only became more frequent. The late chief's supporters formed a militia which is now active in at least the three Kasaian provinces of central DRC. The violence has escalated amid political crisis in the capital. Elections planned for November were delayed, and President Kabila has stayed in office even though his elected mandate has expired. VOA spoke to Stephanie Walters of the Institute for Security Studies Africa.
We've seen insurrections pop up for a variety of reasons in Congo over many, many years. I think the big difference is that the context has changed quite significantly. And so we're now looking at a movement that is present in an area that is largely an opposition stronghold, and where we have a government in Kinshasa that lacks legitimacy, and we have, you know, gross human rights violations that are being committed.
The government says it has already detained soldiers over alleged abuses in the Kasai region, although not specifically in connection to the killings depicted in the video. William Klaus for VOA News, Mwanda.
People with skin infections may someday be able to treat them with a cream that contains antibiotics from good bacteria living on their skin. A new study showed two antibiotics secreted by a helpful skin bacteria kept harmful microbes at bay. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Our skin is covered in bacteria. Microorganisms that live on the skin significantly outnumber cells in the human body. Most of them are helpful to our health and some are harmful. Among those is Staphylococcus aureus, which can aggravate a common but annoying and embarrassing skin condition called eczema. If it becomes resistant to antibiotics, S. aureus can become life-threatening. In healthy skin, the body keeps bad microbes in check with good bacteria that produce natural antibiotic peptides. For some people, that balance is off. Researchers at the University of California in San Diego screened 10,000 colonies of bacteria and discovered two, S. hominis and S. epidermis, that produce antibiotics which defend against S. aureus. In a Science magazine interview, Richard Gallo, chair of UC San Diego's Department of Dermatology and senior author of the study, likened finding antimicrobial peptides to a famous discovery.
This somewhat reflects the initial discovery of penicillin in bread mold. These are naturally occurring antibiotics that are very potent and kill, and as Dr. Nakasuchi mentioned, selectively kill pathogens but maintain the normal healthy bacteria that live on our body.
Teruaki Nakasuchi was lead author of the study published in the journal Science Translational Medicine. Researchers isolated and then formulated S. hominis and S. epidermis into a cream tailored to each of five eczema patients with their own helpful bacteria that was then applied to their skin. Every one of the patients saw a dramatic decrease in S. aureus on their skin. The cream also suppressed the growth of antibiotic-resistant S. aureus. Gallo said it's unlikely that harmful bacteria would develop similar resistance to the natural antibiotic peptides the way man-made antibiotics eventually fail in some patients. That's because the personalized creams would contain more than one natural antibiotic.
Resistance happens when you just attack a bug one way. And what this type of microbiome approach or bacteriotherapy does is attacks the pathogens by multiple different ways at the same time. Turns out that's how the body naturally defends against infections, and that is something that has been effective for hundreds of thousands of years in evolution.
The researchers say personalized skin creams could eventually be developed to treat other skin conditions like acne. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's former Minister of Labor, who resigned from President Kiir's transitional government last week, says there are daily human rights violations and crimes against humanity being committed in the country by the South Sudan Army. Lieutenant General Duap Both Lam says he stepped down because of what he calls a lack of seriousness from President Kiir to end the fighting in parts of the country. South Sudan Catholic bishops say they've received disturbing reports from seven dioceses indicating government and opposition forces are using a scorched earth policy in many villages and towns across the country. Wrapping up a three-day conference today, Father Charles Abed Edwards, Secretary General of the South Sudan Catholic Bishop Regional Conference, says it's civilians who suffer when South Sudan's warring parties burn villages to the ground. Bishop Edward described some of the ruthless violence, including rape and the looting of property, at the end of the conference. Forces who commit crimes on both sides have not been punished, according to the bishop. And finally, the European Union has donated more than 80 million euros, or about 90 million U.S. dollars, to help millions of South Sudanese displaced by the conflict. The head of the EU's humanitarian operations in South Sudan says the funds will be used to purchase food for millions of people who are starving. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Ceasefire by Kebaz featuring Young Bow. Hey.
Zeta Duban, Junuk Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, Lakisi Yasa Shilu Nasfa, Ukate Zaman, Nina Kulana Kan Machine, Leki Dam, Shuf Shabab Bimud, Yal Bimud, Bejian, Metalga, Ofof Kaman, Kuli Yama Halbika, Mama Bikore, we want peace.
We have been listening to Kebaz featuring Young Bow with the song Cease Fire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.